A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code THEDIFFERENCE for 30% off every plan. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.
Well, good morning, and welcome to Sunday Take for August 30th, 2026. I'm your host, Blois Olson. There is no rain here at the Great Minnesota Get-Together. It's a great morning after, I think, probably three record days in a row. The morning crowd is navigable this morning and not that big. We're gonna have a show that I've really been looking forward to for a few weeks, and it's two folks who know this fair. They know Minnesota politics. They know kind of the mood of the fair. Eric Escala from WCCO Radio and Public Television and John McCormick from The Wall Street Journal are going to join me. But it's really been a week of trying to measure the mood of Minnesota here in the early days of the fair. And what I would say is it's mixed. There's an angst and there's just kind of a tension between the candidates and partisanship. And as I wrote yesterday, it's starting to be the silly season. People shopping kind of stories that are a little off the rails. But what I'm hearing and sensing is that Minnesota voters really want to talk about issues. They want to talk about property taxes. They want to talk about schools. And they want to talk about fraud. And so we'll kind of do a little flashback when we come back about the Minnesota State Fair with John and Eric. And then we'll talk about what they're seeing this year, not just here in Minnesota, but throughout the country. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to The Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers. And you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. Here on the porch at the State Fair with two journalistic and reporting mentors and legends who follow this stuff closely, Eric Escala, John McCormick. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Let's just start with, we're at the fair. Eric, I don't know how many years you've covered the fair and been to the fair, but what do you think about when you're at the fair?
I think this is my 47th fair. I remember very vividly, you better
switch mics. There we go. 47 years, Eric.
47 years at the fair. This was when Jesse Ventura was running for governor.
Yeah.
And you remember the line at his booth? He was going through those big lemonades, like
yep.
shooting them intravenously.
Because he was talking to everybody.
Because there were so many people. And that
and they were buying T-shirts, bright green T-shirts.
To me, that indicated something's going on. And I think that's my the most... But you had Rudy Boschwitz and the Super Duper Milk House.
Yeah.
Was another one that I think... And it was indicative of a cool strategy to get support. And then, of course, the 2 years ago.
Yes. We're going to talk about 2 years ago. John, you are a State Fair lifer. Grew up here. Roseville, Minnesota native, now reporting for the Wall Street Journal. Take your childhood and take the fair today. What do you see?
Well, I think this is my 57th annual state fair. I did miss the COVID year, as all of us did, unfortunately. But, I always make it a point to get here. Huge part of my childhood. And instead of reflecting on politics, I'm going to reflect on this station. My father, loved this station. And we stood out in this pavilion for hours on end. So being here on the patio is a bucket list item for me. It's a true honor. For my father, this would be like making it to Broadway. And so I'm going to dance as fast as I can this morning and try to not mess it up.
Well, I'm glad we could make it happen. 2 years ago, it was supposed to happen. John, you were supposed to be here. You were supposed to be here, Eric. I think you made it for a little bit. But then we all chased... The governor of Minnesota.
He ended up in the dairy building making a couple of milkshakes, I think. And this was just right after the big announcement and everything. And so he had Secret Service protection and overbearing aides and Washington consultants. And it was really a lot of hubbub.
How quickly Governor Walz's politics and political profile have changed and shifted?
Well, I wonder, Rudy Perpich used to say that I could be at the fair for like an hour, and I knew how the voters thought about me. He said that it was that accurate a barometer of how I was doing with the public. And I don't know, if Walz showed up then, he was a hero.
Yep.
If he showed up now?
Well, he's been here for a couple days, but no media appearances. John, you were saying the Iowa State Fair candidates are moving very stealth-like. Trackers are back. They kind of went away during COVID, but we're back to an era of trackers. And there's just a lot of angst and anger that we feel every day, but it comes out when you're in public events. And frankly, you know, groups on both sides try to provoke it. John?
Yeah, and just to echo on Eric's thoughts about Walz 2 years ago, I mean, he was like on the cusp of being, you know, the vice president of the United States, potentially, and snipers on the roof of the dairy building, which you don't usually see at the fair very often. But, I this is my second day at the fair, and I will say people are being more polite here than at a fair that I visited to the south of here in the state of Iowa. And we can compare and contrast those two fairs if there's a desire to do so. But, there were groups, paid protesters basically at the fair showing up and protesting specific candidates. So I don't know if the candidates here learned a little bit from that and are just being a little bit more covert about their schedules. They're still here. I spent a bunch of time with one yesterday, but they are kind of covert about their schedules.
Well, I would just say this, and I wrote about it before the fair started. Candidates on both sides have an anxiety, and it's warranted, especially after the assassination of Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark and the attempted assassination of the Hoffmans, and just the confrontation. Even anybody who doesn't give them fair time or equal play is subject to agitation from just kind of gadfly people. And there's restraining orders all over town. Speaker Damoth has a restraining order against somebody who sent horrible voicemails. And so in a public place like this, anybody is going to be a little more careful, but their security detail is going to be really careful and on top of it.
But you talk about angst among the general public. What was one of the big stories in the week before the fair? Negotiating with gang members not to have shootouts Saturday night.
Right.
And that was a mainstream story with featured Sheriff Fletcher from Ramsey County. And this is what was before the public in the news event a few days before the fair.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely public safety, we have noticed, is a top three issue this year in polls and has been since November. And I don't remember, probably since 9/11, that safety and security was a top three issue. And so I do think it's on folks' minds. So let's just, 2 years ago, it was Governor Walz. I mean, John, you've been to Iowa, you've been to Wisconsin. What's the mood of the Midwest right now?
I mean, it's sort of surprised mood that people, for Democrats especially, like in the state of Iowa, they have races where they are competitive.
Yep.
And there's a chance that that a Democrat's going to win the governorship in the state of Iowa. And so, you know, there's a lot of there is a lot of angst, especially in these rural states. There is, you know, a lot of concern about tariffs. There's a lot of concern about fertilizer prices. There's a lot of concern about diesel prices. And like in a state of Iowa where the household income is just lower than it is in, say, Minnesota, when that price of gas goes up, it is felt in those households even more than it is felt in a household where the income is maybe $80,000 or $100,000.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I think, you know, these Midwestern states are feeling that agricultural pain. And, you know, the Wisconsin governor's race next door is looking very competitive. There was a poll out recently where the Democrats seemed to be ahead there. That would sort of be a save the seat because Evers is a Democrat. But they had some, you know, a huge bunch of drama just a few weeks ago when the DSA candidate, Democratic Socialist of America candidate, almost won the Democratic nomination there within one percentage point. And that would have been a very interesting race for the general election.
That would have been a story. That would have been a huge national story in middle America. And I'm guessing, John, just, you know, I have a little fun here. I'm guessing that's a story that the Wall Street Journal would have paid a lot of attention to.
Yeah, I think there's a great curiosity about sort of this Democratic Socialist of America energy and movement. So, yeah, I think we probably would have spent a fair bit of time covering Francesca Hong. I interviewed her for about an hour sort of before the big Thanksgiving story broke.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're in the general election phase now, and I think both neighboring Wisconsin and Iowa are going to have, you know, very competitive governor's races.
Eric, we had record turnout in the primary, competitive races at the top of the ticket on both sides. When was the last time you felt that kind of primary energy or primary drama in Minnesota?
Well, never. It was a record.
Right.
And it was 1.1 million. 64% were Democrats, which leads pundits to say, well, the energy is on the DFL side, and who knows. But I, along those lines, Blois and John, I wonder if people are following the news even a little bit and seeing all of these stories competing about, can we vote here? Can we mail in a ballot? Do we have to all of these sort of things that are in court now. And I wonder if that, again, adds to the, will there be intimidation on Election Day? And I wonder if that adds to the anxiety a little bit.
There's definitely pieces like that that have added to the anxiety. We had a little bit of it here in the primary, and we can talk about that more when we come back. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Take. You know, Minnesota's rural communities are changing, and their future matters to all of us. I'm Blois Olson, inviting you to the Compeer Financial Rooted and Rising Rural Forum, September 14th through the 16th in Owatonna. It's where community leaders, businesses, organizations from across rural America will come together to talk about what's next, from economic opportunity to healthcare to investment, stronger communities and new ideas. If you care about the future of rural Minnesota, be a part of the conversation. That's Rooted and Rising, a rural forum, September 14th through 16th. Learn more at compeer.com/ruralforum. That's compeer.com/ruralforum. Joining me on the porch, we might want to make this a tradition going forward. John McCormick from the Wall Street Journal, Eric Escala. We're just talking about kind of the tensions in the fair and record primary turnout. Eric, what do you make of this race compared to other open governor's races or the energy you saw out of the primary?
Republicans have their best set of statewide candidates, I think you could say, since 2002.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Oh, I think 2002 or 2006. Yeah.
And so they have and they have fraud.
Mm-hmm.
They have a president, though, that I suspect, you know, he finished third in the 2016
yes.
caucus, Trump did. So this is not exactly Trump haven. So I think both sides have baggage.
Yes.
And I think
it's heavy.
And it, and it's fun when you don't know what's going to happen.
It is fun. You always told me to vote the story when I first.
Absolutely.
You got me here. Talk about that, though, because one of the things, and John, maybe this is true in other parts of the country or not as true, is, you know, in Minnesota midterms, Trump voters haven't turned out for Republicans. And it's been a real challenge. If you drive through Mille Lacs County right now, there are billboards in central Minnesota that said, if you voted for Donald Trump in 2024, you have to vote Republican this year. So it's an identified issue. Is that true other places?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true that Trump voters traditionally have not turned out unless he is on the ballot. Not all of them, obviously,
right.
but many of them will not turn out. So the GOP is very concerned about turnout. It's going to be interesting to see where and how the president is used in these closing months of the campaign. You know, there are some candidates in Iowa who probably want him at their side, and there's some GOP candidates there who maybe don't want him at their side. So it'll be interesting. We think he's going to go to Iowa to try to, you know, rally the GOP base there, but it'll be interesting to see which GOP candidates show up and which are maybe kind of busy that day. You know, the president's approval rating is not great nationally. And even in some of these states like Iowa that he carried by 13 percentage points, his numbers there are not great. So it'll be fascinating to see where he shows up in these Midwestern states and across the country.
There's a live hand grenade rolling around on the floor, and that is Trump's $400 million of a political action committee that he says he's going to spend extolling the virtues of himself.
Right.
And what's that? What would $400 million do to campaigning?
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, you talk about the ag community. We could tell at FarmFest they're just not as hot on Trump. In fact, when Mike Lindell said, when we were moderating the gubernatorial forum, he had plenty of applause lines. But when he said, I can call a guy in the White House, there wasn't a lot of applause. And so I think they're starting to kind of delineate between policy and personality. And you look at the last 2 weeks of tariffs and trade deals with, or lack thereof, with Canada. And you look at the Midwest, that's a key trading partner, especially for ag, automobiles. So I think money matters, Eric, but there's so much money in this election. And here in Minnesota, we have seen outside money in a primary on both sides like we've never seen before. And, you know, in the reality was, on the Republican side, the money mattered in the primary. Those candidates who had more money in the primary won. On the DFL side, the candidates who had the most money lost. And that showed that grassroots energy was real. Was it 1990? Is there another year that you saw grassroots energy like you saw since Operation Metro Surge?
Well, this is Wellstone. This is We All Do Better When We All Do Better. And it's been interesting to watch the framework of the organization that fought ICE during the surge.
Yes.
They've kind of, it's a smaller group now, of course, but they've put their attention to DFL politics, at least in the Twin Cities. And I think that's been a place where they were looking for something where we could still use our organization. And I think they found it in this year's campaign.
Well, many of the captains in each community were the DFL legislator or the DFL candidate. And so they started building their campaigns in January and February, and it gave them volunteers.
Right.
And they saw it on the doors. One thing I've heard, John, here, and candidate quality, you talk about it in Iowa and some other places. You know, Republicans are energized here. And I've heard from a lot of folks on the doors that since the primary, there's a new open-mindedness, that there was this, oh, we're not going to have the best candidates on the Republican side, but that, you know, if you start to get to second, third ring suburbs, people are like, I feel like I have a choice this year. you know, is that the Wisconsin gubernatorial race now, or is that, you know, you were in Illinois, you're going to Michigan. Is there a sense that when these kind of outlier candidates are on the ballot that it takes away energy?
I think the GOP in some of these states did not get their preferred candidate in the Democratic side. And so, like, we talked about that in Wisconsin. In Michigan, they did get the pretty far left progressive, not quite DSA, but almost candidate in that Senate race. You two are experts in Minnesota politics. I want to ask you a question. I mean, this state did nominate Peggy Flanagan, and other than maybe like Keith Ellison, has anybody won statewide in recent history who would be as progressive as Peggy Flanagan? Or would that sort of be a new benchmark for the state for a statewide office holder?
I think it's Wellstone would be the last one. It's a populist movement, and I was with some folks yesterday, and they were asking me about this populist energy that we're feeling. Look, I think Operation Metro Surge changed the entire dynamic of the Democratic primary here. The Lake and Riley Act was the weight around Angie Craig she couldn't get away from. You know, I was talking to folks in rural Minnesota who are more moderate. They were Mike Hatch Democrats and, you know, and got Tim Walz through primary. When I looked at the modeling, it was very clear that Angie Craig needed to overperform in her own congressional district, and she needed Dean Phillips Democrats to show up in the third, and they didn't. She tied in her own congressional district. And so one anecdote that told me that it was going to probably go the way it went was I was talking to some bankers, and a banker from the second district looked at me and said, I voted for Angie Craig every time, and I just voted for Peggy Flanagan. I said, if Democratic bankers are voting for Peggy Flanagan, Angie Craig's got some trouble.
I'll say. I wonder, this time and place, with politics dominating our view of the state fair, I wonder what the future of retail politics is. David Plouffe, you know, the Obama head guy, first campaign, said that every campaign statewide should have its own production studio to do videos and blogs before it gets into the mainstream media. Thereby, the gatekeeping effect of the legacy media is gone. I wonder if we're seeing toward the end of retail politics.
You're stealing one of my next pieces, Eric, and that is this is the content campaign. The amount of content the candidates are putting out on their own. And I'm watching not just the content, I'm watching how many views it gets. And, Eric, the number of legislative candidates who are spending hours creating content when traditionally they'd be door knocking, especially on the Democratic side, is huge. They're using the State Fair to get their content now. In fact, we were talking about Governor Walz. He's posting content from the State Fair, but he hasn't done any media interviews. And that does take away that ability. But they're feeding their own bubble, and they're just driving algorithms. John, are you seeing this in other parts of the country?
Yeah, no, I mean, you increasingly see a social media team hovering around any candidate. And or even state chairman. I was, you know, at the Iowa Fair 10 days ago or so. And, you know, the state chairman for the GOP had his own sort of social media content crew around him. And I saw Amy Klobuchar here on the fairgrounds yesterday and saw her eating an apple in the Ag Hort building. And there on my Twitter feed this morning was Amy Klobuchar eating an apple in the Ag Hort building. So, yeah, it's sort of the live streaming of campaigns. You know, I'm a member of the media, so I think we still have a very important role in terms of asking hard questions and writing about these candidates and races and demographics and advertising, fact-checking, all that. But, they are increasingly eager to bypass the mainstream media.
Well, and this is a place, you know, I mean, we might as well give it the shameless plug. If you go to thedailyagenda.com, you can see my piece from yesterday. This is where money matters. So in Minnesota, Eric, Democrats have these teams, the social media teams. Minnesota's DFL state party chairman has a social media team. The Minnesota Republican Party chairman does not have a social media team. They don't have the staff. on Friday, I got third-party groups that were tracking, sending me feeds, trying to get me to, you know, take the bait on some stories from Democratic outside groups. Republicans don't have that level of staffing and production, at least in Minnesota so far. Now, the third-party groups might. I know that they did. We saw them at the Republican convention in Duluth, Eric. A lot of third-party groups there getting content that we're seeing in TV ads now. But that is, you're right, the side of retail. I mean, it's just like products. Products are using social media to sell, so are campaigns. Have you noticed that candidates have always been careful, at least the good ones. Eric, have you noticed they're more careful or less available?
Oh, they're less available for sure. And I think the debates, I don't know what's happening around the rest of the Midwest, but aren't you folks that schedule debates having an issue getting an agreement to have debates?
I'm still an optimist. We'll have a debate here next Sunday between the auditors' candidates.
Okay.
I am optimistic we will have a healthy number of gubernatorial debates. I would say 3 to 5.
You think we'll have that many?
I think we'll have 3 for sure. I think the key is having the biggest audience possible. So we obtained a national partner this week to do a gubernatorial debate, and that made things more impressive. Like, oh, so if we can stream locally, we can do it on the radio. We know that a C-SPAN might pick it up and a national partner might amplify it. That's a nonpartisan group. The candidates were like, oh, okay, then, you know. And I think, you know, in the gubernatorial race, there's a sense of, you know, Damoth would like 20 debates. Klobuchar would like 2. Klobuchar did 1 debate 2 years ago in her Senate race. In the Senate race, it'll be really interesting because Peggy Flanagan has been very reluctant to debate. And you know Michelle Tafoya wants to debate all day long. And so, just like John said, the journalism part is important. I still think debates are really important. I think they're one of the few places you can really see candidates think on their feet and be there. And my line has been, if you want to go to the U.S. Senate, you better know how to debate before you get there. Eric, how did debates just used to happen more easily?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It was just seen to be part of the deal. You were going to debate 3, 4, 5 times. I think the Hatch Pawlenty year, they had, what was it, a dozen?
Yeah.
And it was a kind of a League of Women Voters good government thing.
Yep.
Now it's a strategic decision. It isn't what's best for the voters. It's what's best for my campaign. And do I want to give my opponent, who may be trailing me, equal footing with me and get some rub off of me? And get some publicity that they otherwise wouldn't get.
Well, I will tell you this, that 4 years ago, the Jensen Walls Farm Fest debate, which just kind of happened to be a knockdown, drag-out rock and roll party in Redwood Falls.
I was there. It was good.
It was good. I came off the stage, and the statute of limitations will run out on this soon, but Ken Martin pulled me aside and goes, that was not good. And I said, why wasn't it good? And he's like, Walls look mad. And I said, oh, by the way, he's gotten beat up on COVID and George Floyd. He's got to punch back. And Jensen, they went at each other. And as you recall, that was the last real debate he did. And they did not like the optics of the debate. It wasn't the substance, because Walls clearly knew his substance. They didn't like the optics. And obviously that's been debates forever, but I think they're just more careful. John, are we seeing debates in other states?
Limited. I mean, this is definitely the debate about the debates season. But time, you know, TikTok, I mean, there's, I think it's 65 days today. Yep. Until the midterms, so there's not a lot of time. So these events need to start getting scheduled, put on people's calendars. But yeah, same thing in Iowa. There's negotiations over, you know, how many Senate debates there's going to be. There's negotiations over how many gubernatorial debates there's going to be. And so they probably will happen. And some of the candidates, obviously, who have television experience, are very comfortable on a television set, are more eager to do them than those who maybe are a little less polished.
We've entertained the idea of a debate commission in Minnesota, Eric, where the broadcasters set out the dates and then they don't get to negotiate. So we'll try that maybe in 2 years.
Well, time is escaping us, so you need to get on that in 2 years for sure, because I think they're floating away from us, the debates.
I
worry about that.
Let's dig into kind of where you see a legislature.
Case in point, see Hillary Clinton.
And Kamala Harris, who underperformed Joe Biden in 2020. But you're right. Eric?
What helps the Democrats' statewide candidates is the concentration in the metro area of blue districts. For legislative races, it's a different situation because you get beyond the exurbs and it's a lot of Republicans.
Yes.
And so I think the statewide map is a little bit different than the map that would allow geographic supremacy in metro but not greater Minnesota, where Republicans would do better.
You know, so I have a chart that David Montgomery deserves all the credit for creating for me 6 or 8 years ago, but we update it every cycle. Starting in 2018, and Ken Martin told me he was going to do this in 2017, the Democrats created a turnout machine in the metro that gave them a 300,000 vote advantage coming out of Hennepin and Ramsey County. And for Republicans to make that up in greater Minnesota has proven impossible. And that turnout is the thing that, Eric, you're referencing. And you look at places like the suburbs or the second ring suburbs, not quite till you get to the exurbs. And that's a factor, John, we've seen nationally is, you know, you look at the 3rd District of Minnesota. It was a reliable, moderate Republican, Jim Ramstead, Eric Paulson district. Republicans have a tough time finding a candidate now against Kelly Morrison. And it was an open seat 2 years ago, and they still couldn't find, you know. And so it strikes me that there's a whole group of voters in the suburbs that aren't likely to go back to Republicans until they have the right candidate or Trump's gone.
Yeah, we'll find out in November. But I think there are a lot of suburban voters who are, they oftentimes do tend to be independents. And that's one thing that we're seeing across the country is the proportion of voters who identify as independents is growing everywhere. I don't know if that's the case in Minnesota, but it is in some of these other Midwestern states. And so those candidates who can appeal to, you know, the busy suburban voter who maybe has become disgruntled with Trump, maybe they did try Trump and they're not happy with how things are going, that's going to be a sweet spot for Democrats to tap into.
Eric, education has long been a huge rallying cry in Minnesota. It is no longer a top three issue in every poll for the last 9 months.
Well, the candidates don't talk about it except to say achievement levels or graduation rates or whatever. We have a school funding formula. You want to get into the weeds. There are four people in Minnesota that know this K-12 funding formula.
Let's hope they all stay alive.
Because it is, I think, intentionally totally incomprehensible to the layperson. And we should be having a debate about education and funding and curriculum. And we're getting the greatest hits of immigration and fraud, so on and so on. I'm hoping, and you gave me some good advice on this a while back. I was mentioning this to you in an email, that we need a substantive campaign, and you said we've got to ask the right questions. And I thought that was a clarion call to the news media.
Well, it is true. I think that, and it's easy for me, right, like as a pundit to say that, but we have to ask substantive questions. And I think in governor's races, they really matter on issues like schools and healthcare. So in the battery here in Minnesota, from last December to this June, fraud is number one. As what do you think the biggest problem facing Minnesota is? And it's not just the language of fraud. It's fiscal mismanagement, which you would never have thought of in Minnesota before.
Ever. I mean, this was the good government state. And
right.
So it has been very jarring to sort of watch that happen.
And it is not being forgiven quickly, and it's going to take a lot of change. Then it's healthcare, and then it's public safety. And then it's older adult services and taking care of our parents, and then it's education. And that, for those three of us who are natives, for education to be the fifth concern of Minnesotans says that we're getting older and that maybe the schools have had the resources. What are they doing? When they say, what should the budget priorities be? It pops back up into the number three. But they're not worried about it as an issue. And And I think that changes at the doors this year, because if you're in the suburbs and you're door knocking and they're not talking to you about schools, you might have a different conversation than you had before.
Well, the legislature has lucked out in that the humongous property tax increases will be seen next year.
Yeah.
After the election, because they're going to be very, very eye-opening, I think. There's a front page story in the Strip this morning about that very issue.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, we're going to wrap up here, but I want to thank you to, as we kind of leave this segment, John, we'll start with you. What are you looking for your next day and a half at the fair? What are you looking for in the mood of Minnesota?
I mean, how are people feeling about the ag economy? And you brought up the fact that, you know, there are only women at the top two on these top two tickets that are up in November. So I am finding myself interviewing a lot of women candidates. This may be a state where I pop into and literally the only candidates I interview are women. So that's unusual. And I'll probably talk to some women about that and how they feel about, you know, these top two jobs that are on the ballot here being, you know, your choice is a woman or a woman. That's pretty unusual.
Eric, you and I in 1 year on Labor Day watched a gubernatorial thing where I turned to you and I said, this Tom Emmer guy has a future. And you reminded me a year later. You called it a year ago. What are we going to be looking at in a year in the politics of Minnesota?
I really think what I'm going to be looking for is how motivated the voters are over two issues. And they're the greatest hits issues of this campaign cycle, and that is immigration, the two people that got shot and killed, Operation yep. Surge, and then fraud, which apparently is overwhelming. And it'll be interesting to see if those turn into single issues among voters, and which one has more weight is when we count the votes on the 3rd of November.
Well, I want to thank you guys. This is a treat to have you here on the porch. And when we come back, we'll give a little quick take on the Sunday Take.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. It's always a treat to be here at the Great Minnesota Get Together, and this year's take is in the spirit of that. Look, it is very rare in today's politics that you get to talk to candidates, and they are here. Ask them what you want to ask them. Ask them about issues. Ask them about what they're going to do and how they're going to lead. I still think the best way to get to know a candidate is to look them in the eye, shake their hand, and understand what they're thinking and where they come from. And no place in Minnesota offers that here. And if you're a candidate and you do not spend time every day here at the Great Minnesota Get Together, shaking hands and meeting the residents of this state, you're missing an opportunity to really understand Minnesota. And for all of the fervor and divide that we have had for the last 6 years, understanding the whole state is critical, especially at the top of the ticket. With an open government, you follow the legislature very carefully. It's tied in the House, one seat in the Senate. Like Congress, Minnesota doesn't have as many competitive seats anymore. Is that based on districts or a change in the state, Eric?
Are there 18 competitive out of 201 legislators?
Probably. That's the high bar.
Yeah. It depends on the top of the ticket, don't you think, John, for legislative races? It's so informed by the national scene and the kind of the ability to see Amy Klobuchar's on top. She can drag some legislators behind her, that sort of thing. And I'm sure Damuth can drag some Republican legislators behind her, candidates behind her. So I think it's very dependent on the top of the ticket.
I think on the Damon Klobuchar piece, I just looked at the numbers Thursday night in where Klobuchar, Ellison in 2018 were on the ticket the same year. And she overperformed him by 12 points.
Wow.
And so you look at him in that AG's race this year and what that means in a...
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
What if the thing you're listening to right now never got interrupted? What if it could play uninterrupted from room to room on Sonos? What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? What if you really like how it feels and you become a Sonos person who can't stop saying to their friends, "What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels?" Because it's not magic, but it's not not magic.